This is the 12th of January, 2013, and we are at Narke Street 945 Bible study. And my name is Baruch or Brian Kvasnika, and I'll be sharing on the vision of Acts. And by that I mean a panoramic view of the book of Acts as it relates to the early Yeshua movement, the early way, the early Jesus movement, and also to us today. Right, that takes a leap of cognition and faith, right, to appropriate Acts for us today and talk a little bit about community and what that is and what it can be, what it should be in our life today. So that is the goal of today, and we're going to map out the book of Acts, both sort of by journeys and by calls and interludes, as well as sort of physically on the board as well with the different journeys that Paul had. Some of what we will be talking about the organization or the ordering of the New Testament believers, is a bit dry, I have to say. I keep coming back to dry material of halakha, of how one walks before God, Jewish religious practice, what we're supposed to do. And I am often checked in my heart or mind that this is a dry subject, in a sense. I mean, it excites me thoroughly, but for many, and even for me, rules, regulations, order is not a very sustaining subject. Does that make sense? Things that sustain...
Nourishing.
Sustaining. Even sustaining as in the long haul. Yeah, and I mean, and yet, without it, our communities are disorderly and sometimes dysfunctional. And so I've likened it a little bit to skeleton and flesh, a common theme, right? Maybe the rules, the regulations, the ordering, knowing who you are, identity, all these things, in some ways, is a bit like a skeleton. Yes? But it doesn't really give life fully to walk, you know, sinews and flesh and meat and such. And so it takes relationship with people, love, fellowship, correction, being chastised, being encouraged,
disciplined,
being empowered, all of that in relationship to really put flesh on the bones. And so as much as I have a tendency to look at the skeleton, I also, because it is so foreign to me and it's so exciting, like something that's foreign is kind of new and fresh and interesting sometimes, yes? When you go to a new country. And so for the past 15 years, for me, being in this country and learning Hebrew and getting to know the Jewish context of the New Testament has been very new and exciting, yes? But it doesn't sustain. And so I would like to hold these two images or two aspects in tension. And so we will go through a little, we'll be touching on some of the drier issues, but then we're going to come back to the flesh as well and try to make some connections for life. So I would like to talk a little bit about the book of Acts. And I want to break down the book of Acts in such a way that it has a special title, a special title, and it's called, you ready? Saul Paul's Call, Six Journeys and Two Interludes. Okay, so this is the first part. Don't look at the slide yet. This is the first section. Paul's early years, but this is taken from some teaching I did in Greece, Turkey, Rome in November. And this is the greater vision that we're going to be seeing and having a handout later on. Saul, Paul's Call, Six Journeys and Two Interludes. We typically think of Paul having how many journeys?
Three or four,
right? People talk about three journeys and the Rome journey, right? So three or four, right? But really, we're going to see that Paul has six journeys and two significant interludes. And guess where those interludes are found? Right here in Jerusalem, right? Where was Paul born?
Tarsus.
Where is he from?
Tarsus.
Maybe not. Let's look more closely. If we look at Acts 21, 39 and 22, 3, he says he was, I am a Jew, born in Tarsus of Sicily, but brought up in this city, Jerusalem. So where are you from? It depends on what age you moved, yes? If you were born like my boss, however, in China, he was born in China, right? And you were born in South Colombia, right? So Pastor Cobb and Sharon was born in Egypt. All three of them, interestingly, yeah, probably don't say they're from Egypt, South Colombia, or China. Right? You moved when you were how old, Pastor Cup?
Year and a half.
Year and a half.
4 or 5 months.
4 or 5 months. Yeah. However, year or two, I don't know exactly. Maybe three, I don't know. The Greek here in Acts 22:3 is a little clearer than the Greek English, but it's not more, it's not clear enough to specify exactly when. But brought up in this city has to do from after breastfeeding until early, late childhood. So we have a window of 1 to 8, something like this, 9.
Well,
yes.
That's
right. He's trained at the feet of Gamaliel in every detail of the Torah and our forefathers. Yes, I was zealous for God. And we're going to come also to Galatians 1:14, which says, I outstripped my contemporaries. If you have to be decently rooted in that culture and language and stuff to outstrip your contemporaries, right? I came, Johnny come lately to Israel. My Hebrew isn't as good, I mean, as some, or my cultural knowledge and tacit information and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's an uphill battle. For Paul, it seems that he came at an age, maybe not as young as Sharon, but maybe like Pastor Goff, or maybe a little bit later, to Jerusalem. And so it's a bit of a trick question. You're right. Most commentaries in most places, right, just flatly state he's from Tarsus. And that's partly true, but partly not. And that little bit of knowledge can change our view of Paul in massive ways. Significant ways.
Just formative years.
Formative years, exactly. For sure. No matter what age he comes, definitely at formative years, right?
If he's at the feet of Galileo, he's going to be there in his late teens.
Right, and if we follow Perkei Avot, the chapters of the fathers, then you start at 5 in Torah, and 10 at Mishnah, and 15 or something at Talmud, or something like this, basically. So he's brought up from a young age, right? So that is significant. So Paul is rooted in Jerusalem, formatively. That's a helpful way of looking at it. He's connected a little bit to Tarsus, and we'll see that he's sent by the Jerusalem elders back to Tarsus. Yes.
It also explains why he felt free just to turn to the crowd and open up and give a speech in Hebrew.
Yep.
Because he'd been raised there.
Yep. In Acts 21, he speaks in.
Right, the verse before this is where it says that.
Yep. That's okay. Acts, and it's not on the screen, but in Acts 22, is it 22? He speaks in Hebristo, in Hebrew, and everybody's quiet. Right? Because he's one of the locals. He is heard. Okay, so we have Acts 22:3. That's also confirmed by Acts 26:4. Also tacitly a little bit by Galatians 1:14, where he outstrips his contemporary Jews. We also have a little later, of course, but Paul or Saul. Enough anchored in the community to feel comfortable in persecuting Stephen. Right? You don't persecute someone very easily unless you are the majority or comfortable in your cultural setting. Yes? And so it's usually minorities who get persecuted. The way seems to be a minority at this point. Or at least this diaspora voice of Stephen seems to be a minority. Right? Maybe the Jewish believers in Jesus aren't such a small minority, according to Acts, over 20,000, which is no small number in Jerusalem in 54 AD. Okay, so we have these four little points that show that Saul and Paul's early years are... I thought my colors are going on this. So we're going to have some problems. We have another map, so we'll put that up. I don't know why... It might be the bulb. Does anybody know? I got to figure it out. I've had some problems recently. Okay, so this is not a very clear map. But you can see Tarsus up here. The main point is here. Tarsus and Jerusalem. Not known as Palestine, of course. Judea, Samaria, first century. Not anachronistic names for this region. Then Paul, this for those who came a little bit later, this is a big painting of the vision of Acts. And we're going to kind of run through, touch on a few points, and tie it back together between skeleton and flesh, as I talked about. Paul has a dramatic experience, and this is called by many Paul's or Saul's call. This is Acts 9, right? 1, also 19, and also 25. So we get three versions of the story. And this has been linked up with Kaukab Hill, modern Syria. We should be able to see this. Oh, I forgot to mention also we have later reports by Jerome that Paul's family originated from Gushkalav in Galilee. So we have this connection as well from later period, 4th century. So whether it's true or not, but we have early patristic evidence also for this. There's a picture of Gushkalav and... It's not in this picture, but it's a heavily Maronite city today, but it also has remains of a 3rd century synagogue in the Wadi or Nahal, nearby. There's still, some, they're trying to revive Aramaic there. And such.
Yeah.
So there's El Jish, which also preserves the name nicely. Yeah, Arabic does that often. So... This for the first time I realized that synagogue is on the hill down near the Nahal, which might have some water in it, which is a common phenomenon among synagogues to be near waters, or a place of prayer near water. So that's interesting. Anyway, okay, so here's education, upbringing. These are the four points that we've talked about already. Oh, and here's the synagogue. Okay, so I do have it in here. 3rd, 4th century, not far from the Nahal, down below. You can see it a little bit. He's raised in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is his formative place of living. Here's Jerusalem. Here's the temple. He's sitting at the feet of Gamaliel, which is probably near these steps here, right, where the Pharisees are, the Zakanim, the Prosbotu, the elders. Here we have an aerial photo of that. We're all pretty familiar with the Temple Mount and the teaching stairs of the elders down below. Here's another vantage point. This is one of my favorite places in all of Israel because there are so many connections with the early Yeshua movement, one of them being Saul, being raised right there, maybe, under the feet, at the feet of Gamliel. Some of them bedrock from the first century, some of them added later for safety. Different views here. We have the Theodotus inscription that talks about synagogues in the first century, the temple as being the center, Torah, and yes, we're going to flip through this now. Okay, so now we have his transformation or his call. This is the second part of this talk. At Kaukab Hill, 25 kilometers from the Golan Heights, 16 kilometers from Damascus. And here we can see the modern memorial of that place. I think it's appropriate, following Kishtar Stendhal, not to call it a conversion outright, right? We've been through this many times in the past, so I'm just giving a quick summary. But if we can call it a conversion of the heart, Paul's language over and over again is calling. He's called, called, called. It's a conversion, of his understanding of Yeshua as the Messiah. 180, but as far as a conversion of religion, it's not very helpful to speak of this. So conversion of the heart is nice, or calling, which is the biblical language used in the text. But calling is a bit weak, too. I'm not so liberal as just that it, you know, nothing really happened. It was just a little call or something. It was a real transformation.
Would you call Abraham a conversion or a calling?
Right. I mean, that's right. That's a nice thought, a parallel. He's called out, and his life is radically transformed. Although, but this is also different because he's given up idols and stuff. So, yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's nice to think about. Okay. But before he flees Damascus, let's note a few things. Let's turn to Acts chapter 19. Acts chapter 9, verse 18 through 25. And note that he's healed with Ananias' help, right? He's immersed. And then what does he do? What's the next thing he does in
Acts?
Acts chapter 9, verse 18 through 25. Does it say that?
Spent several days with disciples in Damascus.
Okay.
And then he began to preach in the synagogues.
There it is. Okay, I was looking for the first part of that. But you're okay, so I had forgotten he had gone to synagogues. I remember for sure that he went and he immediately preached.
Okay.
That, for me, until this study tour that I taught this past fall, was dramatic. Basically what I'm sharing with you now is fruits of this, of the vision I put together for this study tour. And there's a few new little chidushim, a few new points. Shosh and I talked about what I was going to speak about, my wife, and Acts. Okay, I've done Acts a lot. Maybe let's not do Acts. But there's enough new things in here, I think, even for the veterans, that it's useful because it's putting pieces of the puzzle together. And for me, this is a small but significant piece to the puzzle. As soon as he's healed, he is going. He doesn't wait. He is preaching already about Yeshua, already in the synagogues in Damascus. And on top of that, he goes to Jerusalem, right? Zealous again as he is. What does he do? What does he do in Jerusalem? He preaches again. He's already on his ministry. We could say his ministry, his journeys begin there. Yeah, I mean, he is converted in the heart. He is called. He is blinded, right? Healed, unblinded, healed, immersed, shows this newness of heart, newness of life, in court, or reorients his religious life around Yeshua, and goes out and preaches. And he's so
fired up,
zesty and fired up that he not only goes, he goes back to Jerusalem, the heart. He's doing so much powerful damage there, that he is sent out from Jerusalem. The elders say in Jerusalem, you're preaching and we got to get you out of here. You know, we're all in trouble, right? He's a rubble rouser. Rubble rouser? He's causing so much.
What strikes me is this word immediately.
Immediately.
Luke, It's also immediately this, immediately that.
Not even as much as Mark, but it's noteworthy that Luke's doing it. Mark is more famous for immediately.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
So Luke, that would even make it more stronger that it's not common for Luke to say immediately. Right. So if Luke says that, then it gives it more.
Same word in Greek.
I haven't looked, but someone has a Greek open, we can see. But
what verse do you mean?
20.
It'd be
9:29.
Ephesus?
Ephesus.
Yes, the same one.
Okay, so here we have the zealous Shaul preaching in Damascus, comes back to Jerusalem, his first visit, Acts 9:26, his first visit, probably the third year visit of Galatians 1:18 through 19, but it's not clear. He comes, according to Acts, he comes back, right, his first visit, Acts 9:26, and what does he do? Verse 28, as we've just said. He's preaching, and what happens? There's an uproar. And what happens then in verse 30? Paul's first sending out is not from Antioch. Acts 9:30, they say, hey, you've got some relatives back in Tarsus, right? Why don't you go to Tarsus and spread that good word, but let us not have your, reversal that took place upset the cart here in Jerusalem. The blessing, is there a blessing for the Tsar, right? Yes, keep him far away. In a sense, Paul is sent out to go to Tarsus, probably because he has relatives there, or he has connections, or he was born there, spent a couple of years there, something like this, right?
That was to save his life.
Yeah, we don't know. Or maybe to save their own reputation.
Skin.
Their own skin, yes. A person who sends the community and the equilibrium off, right? It might be best to keep things at a status quo.
Verse 30 says, when the brethren learned... Isn't that about the attempt to finish death?
Is it? Let's see. I don't recall.
We're looking it up. They had been...
Verse 29.
Themselves.
Yeah.
They had what?
Jerusalem. Yeah. They had endured so much defeat themselves. They were looking for a little respite.
Right.
Chapter 4, chapter 5.
Right. And in that persecution, it's very noteworthy that it's the diaspora Jews that are fleeing, right, after Stephen's death, and the apostles and the brethren are not.
They're not touched.
So we have this diaspora Eretz Israel contingency, which is significant in persecution and such. And such. So we do have threats on his life already in 9:29, is that right?
Yeah.
29:30.
Okay, so Paul was... It was what he dished out was coming back around, right? And so they're aware of what can happen. Shaul, Paul is aware of what can happen. And so he is blessed in being sent out far away to this no mean city of Tarsus, probably because of relative connections. Yeah. So Paul's sent out by the brother in 9:30. He's there in Tarsus via Caesarea. To Cilicia in Galatia. Now, this is confirmed by Galatians 1:21.
Maybe I'll stick this up here. Hold up.
So, Paul himself says in Galatians 1:21 that he was in Cilicia in Galatia. So, you can just see this, yeah? That Cilicia and Galatia are in the area of Tarsus, right? So Paul is going back to his birth root, yeah? So here's Tarsus and Cilicia and Galatia here. And this is a hub of Paul's ministry we're going to see over and over again in his journey. So he's there in Tarsus, via Caesarea. He's hanging out in Cilicia and Galatia, according to Galatians 1:21. And then the Jerusalem Ecclesia wants Saul again, Paul. And in 11:22, we're going to jump ahead now, Acts 11:22, we can see that they send Barnabas to Tarsus to look for Paul. All right, so let's just read that. So we see this hub, once again, of Jerusalem sending out Barnabas to go look for Paul.
Can I just ask a question?
Acts 11:22. Sure. If it's okay, let's read this verse just for a second, and then your question next. Is it 22? Somebody have it?
News of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem, and they sent out Barnabas to go as far as Antioch.
Of Antioch. Antioch. Okay, so he sent, and then let's keep going. Then when they had come and witnessed the grace of God, he rejoiced and began to encourage them all with resolute heart to remain true to the Lord, for he was a good man and full of the Holy Spirit and of faith, and considerable numbers were brought to the Lord, and he left for Tarsus to look for Saul. And when he found him, he brought him to Antioch, and it came about that for the entire year they met with the ecclesia. That's one of my shticks, right? There's no church in the first century. The semantic domain of church in English is not the same as ecclesia in Greek, right? Church in English, the semantic domain often includes steeples and crosses and crucifixes and things like that. Ecclesia is used simply as an assembly. Ecclesia is also used, we learned here in this Bible study from Anders Runiansen, that ecclesia is often is also used for synagogue by Philo. All right, so we can't think of church, we think of assembly or gathering, which is usually maybe community, yeah, but it has to do more with a gathering, of people. So congregation assembly, I think, is a little bit better. But
he could have just said the believers, couldn't he, then, for the church, met with the believers.
Yeah, but he didn't, if that's okay.
Right.
So we do want to be faithful to what he is trying to convey, that it's a gathering. But believers is often used in many cases.
New King James just says a great many people.
Great many people. Okay. Moving on. So the point is that Barnabas is sent out to Antioch. Then he goes to Tarsus to look and bring back Paul. And then in 11:26, he's there for a year. About 43-44 AD, Jerusalem prophets come to Antioch. So we get this Jerusalem wave again. Agabus, who prophesies a great famine, which occurs in the reign of Claudius in 46. And then, guess what happens? Saul, Paul, and Barnabas return to Jerusalem in 46 with famine relief contribution. Right? It's world aid, coming to Jerusalem for the Jerusalem elders in 11:30. So maybe this is Paul's second Jerusalem visit, after, of course, he's been raised there in those formative years. So we've got lots of connections with Jerusalem as the hub. Now, after he brings a contribution, relief contribution, during this famine to Jerusalem in 11:30, Acts 11:30, he's back in Antioch. We meet him in 13:12. He's gone back to Antioch. And there again, he's sent out, but this time it's a little bit fuller, right? He's sent out after fasting and prayer. Prayer and fasting, right? He's sent out by the ecclesia in Antioch. So most people think his ministry begins in Antioch. He's sent out from Antioch, and what? Something that's become even more real to me is that his ministry started long before Antioch. It started in Damascus, and then he's sent out from Jerusalem, right? And so we could even say it starts in Kutnab, with his conversion, but he's not preaching by then. But anyway, in Damascus, and then sent out from Jerusalem, and so he's preaching in Damascus, he's preaching in Jerusalem. He's probably preaching up a storm in Tarsus, right? And we still have reports of it. And so his ministry is greatly happening in these times.
What about his ministry in Arabia?
Yeah, we don't know. I have this in Galatians 1, 7 through 18 and 37, it's possibly, and then it returns to Damascus, it seems. I put Arabia in that time between Damascus and Jerusalem. It's a challenge, we know, and Gary's enjoying throwing out the challenge with this one. But fitting Arabia. What?
When you put it in?
It probably
between
in Jerusalem.
So between Damascus when he was first?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably. And Arabia is clearly much larger than it is today. Right? So
it's big today.
All of the Hashemite kingdom and everything south of Beersheba in antiquity at different times was known as Arabia. So we have the Negev, South Negev of today, and all of the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan, which is considered Arabia. So we've got a lot of space. So he's actually in Arabia in his travels to Damascus. So that's something significant to consider. That the name Arabia has different geographical areas over time. So that's interesting. Even Damascus, I have to check myself now on that. But is Damascus considered part of Arabia? If so, he's already in Arabia. But he's definitely just south of that. It's Arabia. Maybe after Golan Heights, Yarmouk River, or something like that. I would think it's something like that. But he's very close to it. He's 50 kilometers from Arabia, already in Damascus. So yeah.
It doesn't say how long he was there.
Right.
In Galatians, when he makes the comments, he just says, you know, after I saw the Lord, I went to Arabia.
Right.
And then I returned again to Damascus.
Right.
And he stayed there.
And this many people say, you know, there's a change in frontier policy by Caligula in March. And so this might, in March 37, and so this might be the possibility of him returning back to Damascus. He was let down in a basket, right? He flees Damascus. He's able to come back because of a change in head honchos or the policies that take place under Caligula. And so that might be part of the puzzle back there. Okay.
What strikes me more than the specific dating of where and when.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, rather than calling it the Acts of the Apostles, it should be the Acts of the Holy Spirit. And
yeah.
Paul seems to be the most dynamic example of getting on with it from day one, wherever. The Lord sends him here, the Lord sends him there.
Everything.
Sometimes he gets sent out with prayer and fasting, sometimes the Lord speaks to him and he's off.
Yep.
And that seems to be, for me, the most powerful.
Yes, and this is a slide that someone put together that I like a lot, and it calls the Acts of the Holy Spirit and documents different ministries and things
yeah.
like that. I think in the interest of time, we're going to keep moving even faster now. One of the benefits for me personally in this trip that I was on this fall was to begin to name the different journeys. And we've already talked about his early years, mainly in Jerusalem. We've talked about his call on the Damascus Road, his preaching in Jerusalem. His early journey, we can call it, between being sent out. That's like when I gave the title this morning of Saul's call, six journeys and two interludes. I start numbering them from his being sent out from Jerusalem to get out of there, right? And if he's preaching in the past two places, he's probably preaching there as well. We don't really know, but we definitely have his ministry in Antioch for sure, right? And then he's coming back to Jerusalem, right, with famine relief. So that's for sure ministry and journey, right? And so that's the number one journey. Paul's early journey, I call it. Paul's early journey. His second journey is what most people call his first missionary journey. And we're going to run real fast now. I call it Saul's roots. Saul and Barnabas. Okay, we've got short on time. On this side, just look. Barnabas is from Cyprus, right? And Paul, in his first or second journey, is going on his heritage or roots journey. And why is that? If we map it out from group number two, he's going up here to Antioch, and then he's going through his, I'm sorry, here. That doesn't make sense. Because it's my second journey. My second journey. Like what I'm calling the common first journey. And what is he doing? Really? Jerusalem, then Antioch, right? And then he's going to Cyprus for the heritage tour all through the island of Cyprus because Barnabas knows everything, right? And where does he go? Then Paul goes up into Cilicia or Galatia, right? Cilicia. Paul's already been in Tarsus. He's already hit Tarsus for some amount of time, right? And so now he's going to the next community over. Derbe, Lystra, Iconium, right? And he's getting there via Paphos to Perga, which probably is a major trade route there, yes? And so he's doing the heritage, the roots tour, the part that he didn't finish when he went to Tarsus, when he was sent up there. So we've got Barnabas' roots or Barnabas' heritage, and then we come up to Paul's connection, right? You start where you're familiar, yes? And so that fits really well. So that helps me order that by calling his first journey, really second journey, right, the heritage tour or the roots tour. After his, and we're not going to go through all of that, he often goes to the synagogue, as Gary was insinuating, as was his custom. Even after he's sent to the Gentiles, he still keeps hitting the synagogue. Why? Because of God fears. So he's going to Lycaonia and Derbe and Lystra and Pamphylia, and he goes back to Syria and Antioch. And then what happens? Judean brethren came down and taught Mosaic circumcision is required for salvation. Oof. And we've got this big uproar. And so they go back to Jerusalem. Why do they go back to Jerusalem? Because Jerusalem is the hub. It's the power center. It's the place where decisions are made. It's where the epicenter. It's the epicenter of the gospel message in the book of Acts. That's how I like to think of it. It is the epicenter. It's not the beginning. Because then most people think that Rome is the end, right? It's the epicenter where it radiates out. So they return to Jerusalem for the Apostolic Council in Acts chapter 15. If there's one text which is like the core and center of Acts, as far as the frame, right? The skeleton, not the flesh, right? Because these four ceremonial things and such, and circumcision and issue, do not really bring life. They're what structure the community. And the question is, how do Gentiles enter into this Jewish space, or was Jewish space, right, and now be part of the Commonwealth of Israel? So they come back to Jerusalem for regrouping, right? And we're not going to go through all of Acts 15, which we've done before, but what I want to nail, right, is that this apostolic decree is sent out via who? Paul and Barnabas and a couple others. Paul and Barnabas. What? Isn't it also? And Silas. Paul, Barnabas, Judas, Barabbas, and Silas. So we got four. So, Paul, Barnabas, Silas, Judas, Barabbas, Judah, Bar-Saba. These four, well, I want to emphasize Paul, right? Because we have more data on Paul, right? And so, Paul's entire second journey is a proclamation of what was decided in Jerusalem. I'm painting in big
strokes, right?
Which
you're calling the third journey.
Which I'm calling the third journey, right? We've had an interlude. We've had the Jerusalem roots, right, way back in his early years. We've had an interlude of Acts 15 in the Apostolic Council. And now we have the second, or rather the third journey. Oh, wait. Yes, that's a typo here. We're going to get handouts with typos because I've corrected it from the tour. But the second journey, or the third journey, really, is the Apostolic Decree journey. So what is the first journey? In my county. In my county, the first journey is?
Yeah, early journey.
Right. And ministering in Antioch. and preaching, well, actually starting preaching in Jerusalem, Damascus, Jerusalem, Tarsus, Antioch. So that's his first journey. Yes? Second journey is? The roots, which is often called the first journey. This is the my numbering, right? It's a little confusing, I'm sorry. Then we get an interlude of Jerusalem. And then we get the quote-unquote second missionary journey, which is the third journey, which is, what is that second, third journey? That's right. Acts 15. And where does he go? Let's look on the map here. Where does he go? This is the second, third journey, right? So he goes up Antioch, and he proclaims. He it's like his big tour of covering all the bases. He's going where he's been. He's going to new places.
He goes to Europe.
He goes to Europe. He's coming back. It is a round tour because he is proclaiming this super important decree. Yes? And then we're going to move on now to his... Oh, when he comes back, where does he come back to?
Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, right? He goes up to the Ecclesia. Most commentators in Acts 18:22 say that the Ecclesia is Jerusalem. Yes? This is maybe where he's bringing some money. We don't know. We're not going to have time to talk about the collection. And then his third or fourth missionary journey, right, is... What is it? It is... It is right here. And what is my... I have a name for it, but I don't write it down. Okay, I don't remember my name for that one. Okay. But then after that third or fourth journey, what happens? He comes back to Caesarea and then to Jerusalem. And we have the Jerusalem finale. So here's the second interlude between what I call the fourth and the fifth journey.
The fifth interlude is in Caesarea or in Jerusalem?
In Jerusalem. All the interludes, both all interludes, are Jerusalem. Big things happen. Apostolic decree, first interlude. Second Jerusalem interlude, Paul's Nazarite vow. Pays the money, lots and lots of money, for 24 or 30 different offerings. We've got all these sacrifices taking place, right? Because he needs to correct the rumor that he doesn't follow the law, right? And now I was trying to do as much as we could without this, but this will help bring order. So we have about 10 of these. If you can take one, pass around, and we'll summarize. We've gotten up to the second interlude, which is between his actual fourth and actual fifth journey. His fifth journey is the shipwreck journey to Rome. And this is with Julius now on ship, and he goes towards Rome, right? And then we have a sixth set of journeys, which we only have hints at in his, not in the book of Acts, but in his letters, and that's documented here. So if you can just look with me on this handout, we'll have to share, because there's probably not... Do you have to? Yeah, okay, good. Let's run through the whole thing. Saul, Paul's early years, 4 through 34, Jerusalem, Tarsus, and then Jerusalem, formative years. Saul, Paul's call, remember, he never changes his name. He has two names. He's Saul in Hebrew, he's Paul in Greek. Solos in Greek is a rare word for a gay walk. So it's not surprising that he would use that in Greek. Solos is a gay walk. Like a prostitute or something like that. So think of, for example, for example, Randall is Randall. Because in Britain, he's not Randy. Right? He is Randall Booth. Yes? Because in Britain, it has a different connotation. So that might be one of the reasons why, although we have three different occurrences of people in the New Testament that have two names, and they probably just had two names because they had two names, because in different contexts it was appropriate to have two different names. In different languages, in different cultures. Also. Okay, so now we have Saul, Paul's call on Damascus Road, then we have his first journey, Jerusalem, Tarsus, Antioch, back to Jerusalem. His second journey with Barnabas. Now, so the first journey is alone. Second one's with Barnabas. The third part is the interlude, the first interlude. Then the third journey is with Silas. Then the fourth journey, which is in theory the third journey, right, but by most, is with Timothy. And then we've got this Jerusalem finale, the second interlude of Jerusalem. And we have the Nazarite vow, the temple riot, down to Patras, to Caesarea. And then we've got the sixth journey. That needs to be corrected on your handouts because it's number 6 twice, but it's really number 5. You see that? Paul's shipwreck journey to Rome is really number 5. That's with Julius. Each person was each time with a different partner on these journeys. And then finally, his latter journeys, number 6. And so this is the vision of Acts and beyond. And it really doesn't hold a lot of water unless we live out beyond the skeleton to the flesh. So if this is a skeleton of Paul's journeys and discussions of halakhic manners, meaning Jewish religious practice manners, then we really need a vision of community, which is what Paul is after. And so, in the interest of time, we're not going to even read these two quotes that I have from Jean Vanier and Life Together by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but basically they both summarize that you can have ideas of community, but if you don't live it out, even in small and terrible ways, it doesn't amount to a hill of beans. So we need both the structure and the flesh, and we pray that we would be loving together in communities here and abroad. Amen?
Amen.
In very practical ways, and sometimes fumbling ways. That's what these quotes are about, is that often the vision of community has very little reality on the ground because we struggle so greatly. But those struggling to have community and living out is part of the community vision, really, that Paul has. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thanks for the good example. Showing us community, bringing on your guests.
Yes. Okay, yes. Wonderful. We have one of the 9 Bible translators that have arrived. And so we are very thankful.